Welcome to the Engineering Influence Podcast, presented by the American Council of Engineering Companies and sponsored by the ACEC Retirement Trust. Today, we're talking with David Burstein of PSMJ, the firm which provides publishing, executive education, and business advisory services to A&E firms, produces quarterly market trend surveys for the design services industry. David presented the results of their latest survey at the recent ACEC Fall Conference, and he's here with us today to talk about the key findings. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, Jerry. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's just start with the design of the survey. You use AE proposal opportunities. What qualifies as a proposal opportunity, and why do you believe that's the best metric?
So when we ask people about proposal opportunities, it really encompasses both the number and size of the opportunities, just kind of an overall feel for what those opportunities are. And the reason that we actually ask them several questions. We ask them about revenues, we ask them about backlog, but the thing that we look at most is proposal opportunities, because really that's the earliest indicator of what's going to be happening a year or two from now in terms of backlog and revenues. When proposal opportunities go up today, 3 to 6 months from now, backlog is going to increase. Another 6 to 12 months after that, revenues are going to increase. Another 2 to 4 months after that, cash flow is going to increase. And so really, the proposal opportunities are the earliest indicator of what's going to be happening a year or two down the road.
Is there a threshold for something to be an opportunity? Is it enough for someone just to ask if you're available, or is there a specific thing that has to happen?
So we really rely on what's become known as the wisdom of crowds. We have several hundred people each quarter participating in the survey. And so we just ask them basically what's happening to proposal opportunities this quarter versus last quarter. And it's real simple. They only have three options. One is they can say proposal opportunities are increasing versus last quarter, proposal opportunities this quarter are about the same as last quarter, or proposal opportunities have decreased since the last quarter. And then we assign those plus one if it's increasing, zero if it's staying the same, and minus one if it's decreasing. And then from that, we add those up, divide by the number of people who answered that survey question, and that gives us an overall index. So if everybody sees proposal opportunities increasing, that's a plus 100 on our index. If everybody sees it decreasing, it's a minus 100. And if the same number of people seeing proposal opportunities increasing is decreasing, then that's zero. And we ask that of each major market and each submarket. So we track a total of 54 total major and submarkets.
And we also
track it by region.
Right. In the survey, how is the overall A&E industry doing?
Really, really well. I mean, when you compare the recession of early 2020 driven by COVID with the recession of 2008 and 2009 driven by the housing crisis, I mean, our industry is doing way better. We took a bit of a dip in the spring and summer of 2020, but really it was a pretty short-lived dip, and now three quarters, the plus-minus index has been really positive in pretty much across the board.
And historically, as you mentioned, we're doing well for the life of the survey?
Yeah, I mean, prior to the pandemic, the industry was really humming. 2019 was a record year for the A&E industry. 2020, from a profitability standpoint, we took a little bit of a dip. If you don't include the forgiven PPP loans, if you include those, actually firms were even more profitable in 2020 than they were in 2019. But really, it was pretty minor, and it's over. I mean, we've seen since the late 2020, proposal opportunities have just really gone significantly up each quarter, and that's quarter over quarter increases.
So you mentioned you also do it regionally. How are the regions doing? Which ones are the strongest? Which ones are the weakest?
So the strongest regions in the east, the northeast and the southeast are the strongest regions, and then they gradually get weaker as you go west. And when you get to the west coast, it's the weakest region. Even so, well, it's actually Canada is slightly weaker than the west coast of the U.S., but even so, all the regions are plus. There's no regions in negative territory, but the farther east you are, the more positive you seem to be in terms of proposal opportunities.
That's great that nothing's in the negative. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it wasn't like that a year ago, I can tell you that. And, you know, it's we're like back to 2019 all over again.
And then so you also look at specific market sectors and which ones are strong right now, which ones are not doing so well?
So all of the major sectors right now are strong. There are no weak sectors in terms of the overall sectors. When you look at the subset, so the major sectors, I just go through them, housing, commercial, industrial, energy and utilities, healthcare, environmental, education, transportation, water, wastewater, and other government buildings. Those are our major sectors that we track. Every single one of those are in positive territory. In other words, proposal opportunities this quarter are better than they were last quarter. And in just about every case, they've been increasing for about the last three quarters. When you look at the subsectors, the predominant most of the 54 subsectors that we track are also positive. A few of them are neutral, and there's really only two negative ones. The only two negative ones are office buildings and retail buildings. Those are the two negative ones, and that's it. Everything else is either positive or flat, and most of them are positive.
That's remarkable. So in your program, you mentioned that there are a couple significant long-term challenges that could impact both the industry and actually the global economy. One being if the COVID-19 virus develops a vaccine-resistant mutation, or if the Chinese debt crisis blows up. Working under the assumption that neither of those occur, what does BSMJ think is going to happen in the A&E industry over the next couple of years?
So the next couple of years, like I say, barring one of those catastrophes or some other black swan event that nobody can see, based on our index, the next couple of years looks really strong. And that doesn't even include any infrastructure funding. When you throw the very high probability that $550 billion of new infrastructure money is going to be coming down the line, that really, really makes the industry extraordinarily strong. So even without that, I think we would be having a good year or a good couple of years. With that, it's going to be historically high, I think. If you want to look beyond 2 years, the thing that we look at that drives the A&E industry in the longer term is primarily housing subdivisions. And that may seem a little counterintuitive. That's, you know, not very many A&E firms work in the housing subdivision market. But if you think about it, when people are building new subdivisions, which they are right now a lot, they're also building new shopping malls. They're building roads, they're building bridges, they're building water systems, they're building wastewater treatment plants, they're building schools. They're building energy distribution systems. They're building new courthouses. They're building new libraries. I mean, new subdivisions just have a tremendous multiplier effect on about 80% of the A&E industry. And so when we look at that, the new subdivision, we track, that's one of the submarkets we track. And the proposal index for new subdivision looks really strong. It's gone up for like five quarters in a row and up by a lot. So we're very, very optimistic about not just the next year or two, but really even the next 5 or 10 years, assuming that, like I say, no major black swan event happens.
So I guess the point there is that a subdivision goes in today, all those other things start coming down the road. They don't happen as the subdivision happens. They're sort of follow-on events, the courthouses and the playgrounds and the schools.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, some of those things happen right away. You know, the streets and so on happen right away, and the water systems. But a lot of those things, like you say, exactly, they happen farther down the road. And even the things that happen right away, there's still a long-term impact, because what tends to happen is when they're building new subdivisions, they may put in new streets and new water systems and so on right away to serve those. But then down the road, those create additional demand on existing facilities that have to be replaced. And so there's a longer term knock-on effect for those as well.
So are there sectors looking forward, looking ahead the next few years that are strong now that may weaken, or that are weak now that may strengthen over the next few years?
Well, I think there's a couple that have a little bit of concern. One is in the education market. K-12 looks pretty good, but higher education, I think, is problematic. Right now, higher education is kind of coming back, but I'm concerned that may not last. There's some fundamentals that are driving capital expenditures in higher education that are not good. First of all, there's been a lot of capital investment already in higher education, in new buildings and dorms and athletic facilities, all of those kind of things. So a lot of the campuses are already pretty well built out from that standpoint. Plus, it does not look like this Build Back Better plan is going to have any money for higher education, so there's not going to be any funding there. States are cutting back or holding flat their funding of higher education, and tuitions are bearing the brunt, and kids are already rebelling about the student loans. So I think that market is probably, even though it's doing pretty well today, I think it's probably not going to do that well. Retail is an interesting one. Retail's been down for some time, but that may be coming back. That may have bottomed out. One of the things I looked at was the S&P. There's an S&P retail index, which is an index of all the retailers in the United States. And it's got, you know, some of the people like Amazon, you know, and Walmart that are obviously doing well. It's got a lot of other retailers too. And in the past year, that index has gone up by 87%. So somebody thinks that the retail market has bottomed out and is going to be going back up. And that may well be the case.
That would be good for a lot of our firms. Mm-hmm. One of the big issues that's here now and looks like it's going to be here for at least the next few years is the labor shortage. Does that play into your forecast at all?
You know, it doesn't play into the market forecast, but it definitely plays into the financial forecast, because it doesn't do any good to sell more work if you can't get the work done. And the labor shortage is here with a vengeance. I mean, even before the pandemic in 2019, we were already seeing a major labor shortage. There was a little bit of a respite for a few months, but it didn't last very long. And right now, the labor shortage is really at historic levels. And again, that doesn't even include the demand that's going to be put on engineering firms once the hard infrastructure bill, the $550 billion bill gets passed. That's going to put even more. And then even that Build Back Better plan has some additional hard infrastructure money in it as well. So I think the labor shortage is going to be the defining factor in our industry for the next 10 years. The firms in the past have done well if they've won the war for projects and for clients. The firms in the next decade are going to do well if they win the war for talent.
That's an excellent point. I was talking with an engineer at the conference, and he said the exact same thing. Now the competition is for the best people, or even just people.
and I think one of the big challenges is, for the first time in many years, wages are escalating at an increasing rate. In the year prior to the pandemic, wages went up in our industry by 1.3% per year. In the year since the pandemic, they've gone up by 4.5% per year. And it seems to be accelerating. And so, firms are going to have to get used to the idea of paying significantly more. And what that means is that if they want to maintain or improve their profit margin, they're going to have to price more too, because they can't just absorb those kind of labor increases and still charge the same rates that they've been charging. So the good news is that I believe that there's a lot of headroom to increase prices in our industry, and firms have been traditionally underpricing for a long time.
And why do you think that is?
So now I guess I have to put my psychologist hat on. You know, I think it's a combination of fear and guilt. The fear that if they price too high, they'll lose an assignment and they may run short on work, and nobody wants to do that. And then the guilt of just making too much money. It's like, why? You know, we shouldn't be making this much money. You know, it's just not right. And so I think we have to get rid of the fear and the guilt to really get into pricing in a way that optimizes the balance between the volume of work that you do and the margin that you get on that work. Right now, I think people are too focused on volume and not focused enough on margin. And I think that's hurting everybody's bottom line. And I think it's going to get even more so as wage increases accelerate.
And that sort of leads into my final question, which is what steps is PSNJ recommending that A&E firms take to sort of succeed in this market condition?
Well, one thing that we do know is that things are changing rapidly. And so one of the things that we definitely recommend is tracking the various marketing indices like ours on a regular basis. The AIA has theirs, we've got ours, some other people have them. We can provide a link to the listeners to this podcast that will allow them to get these reports for free. All they have to do is participate in the survey and they'll get the reports for free, and it doesn't take very long. So I would certainly, one of the recommendations would be to get these quarterly reports. It can really help you spot trends. People who were getting these before the 2008 recessions got a year's notice faster than anybody else who wasn't getting these reports, and they were able to take advantage of some of the things that were changing. So that would be one thing. I think another thing that we saw during COVID, and we're going to continue seeing, and that is the work from home movement, that caused a lot of firms to struggle more with keeping projects under budget. We saw a significant drop in the achieved direct labor multiplier as a result, I think, of people working from home more and not being able to pay like they were used to. So I think working on a more systematic approach to project management is another thing that I would recommend if you're one of the firms that was seeing that kind of a drop in project performance. Compensation, you know, you really need to stay on top of the compensation. So, you know, make sure that you're watching that, not just annually, but really throughout the year, you know, taking a look at some early indicators to make sure that your compensation structure is internally equitable and externally compatible, and that you look at your pricing, your billing rates, and your utilization targets to make sure that your financial performance stays good or gets even better in spite of raising your rates. Another thing I think that we're seeing, we really haven't talked about, we're seeing, you know, the retirement of the baby boomers is accelerating. And so firms really need to have a good leadership development and succession planning process. And I guess the last recommendation is employee turnover. Really, I haven't talked about that, but clearly in a market that has so much demand as this one, my expectation is employee turnover, which hasn't been increasing in the last few years, I think it's going to start increasing. And probably the best way to prevent your top employees from leaving and going to work for your competitors or starting their own firm is to invite them to become owners and making them an attractive ownership offer to buy in.
Right. I mean, there's three of those are very related. The labor shortage, the leadership transition, and the turnover. So those are all three of those are basically people issues.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, great. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us.
Jerry, glad to do it.
So you've been listening to the Engineering Influence Podcast presented by ACEC and sponsored by the ACEC Retirement Trust. Thanks for listening.